quite a while he's been working on the authentication parts, and he's trying hard to really refactor that every now and then and get it more abstract and so on. And that's the topic he's going to talk about today.
So I'm looking at basically the security service implementation and architecture we have for Samba 4. Unlike in any previous Samba version, we're trying to really do this job seriously. And first I'm going to sort of introduce a couple of things. Firstly, the basic, who I am. I enjoy dealing with these aspects of infrastructure. I particularly enjoy working with code where it's meant to work already, but the interfaces suck badly. I actually enjoy refactoring out some of these things to get somewhere that seems a lot more sane than what Samba has done in the past, which has often been, unfortunately, enough to make it work, not enough to make it work well for into the future. And I also care a lot about authentication through my real-world deployments of Samba at Hawker College, where I'm a network admin. This is a high school of about 900 pupils. And I know what things I need to work to be able to deploy on a real network. It's not just a theoretical challenge. It's something where if we don't get these things working right together, we'll have the nightmare that is most sysadmins at any large integrated site. As Tridge has described adequately in his talk yesterday, Samba is moving on to Samba 4, and in particular, we have this challenge of matching the dominant force in the SIFS marketplace, that is the service produced by Microsoft. And we have to match it very closely. We have to be able to compare our servers to theirs, be able to tell what's different and that most things are the same. And we have a challenge, and the challenge that I've taken on is areas of Active Directory. This is Active Directory is first and foremost a big change in the way security services are done in a Windows world. There are other aspects to it as well, but the things that I see are the changes in the security services, in particular addition of Kerberos and things. We've seen all this in Tridge's talk. A couple of choice quotes from Leon Brooks when I was putting this presentation together. Extended tree structured LDAP integrated into every aspect of your software. And Active Directory really does find its way through everything. And the security services that are tied to Active Directory are tied to every single part of the protocols we deal with. And that is the challenge, is to create a solution that ties the implementations of security services into every aspect of Samba in a way that doesn't send us batty. It's also single sign-on, single source of password, and plenty of protocols. We have to secure every one of these protocols with a single security system, one username and password, one backing store for those passwords, and on the client side, Windows clients never expect to re-enter passwords. So we must match these protocols exactly. There is no choice to say, oh, we don't like NTLM, we'll just force them back to plain text ORF. We can't do that. We have to implement these protocols. We have to implement security protocols. We have to implement it in the same way that Microsoft does. Volker.
I have a question. Is CIDR really authenticated?
No. That one is needed to find the authentication services.
Okay, but that itself isn't signed. And
No. The data in that. Oh, and as per Tridge's rule, I like interruptions. I like questions. This talk will be much more interesting if you heckle. But yes, all the other protocols on the list, other than CLDAP, are typically authenticated. As per Tridge's demo, Jeremy, a good first question.
That slide. So the thing, HTTP can be authenticated.
Yes.
So do you know if they ever do an authenticated HTTP connection using SSL and then tunnel inside that a different authentication using DCE?
Yes.
They do that, so that you can actually do that with a different user. So you can have one user connecting with HTTPS, and then you can then authenticate as a different user inside that tunnel.
There's no reason you couldn't.
Yeah, I just wondered whether you'd ever seen that.
I haven't seen the HTTP layer. HTTPS is a good idea, but often not used. HTTP layer, there's authentication there, where you have your, which is what we see for Windows-based websites when they keep wanting us to do end-to-end authentication. When you wrap DCRPC on that, it starts basically in the same way as you can have SIS authentication with one user and DCRPC with another. I don't see any reason why you wouldn't do DCRPC with that other user as well.
Okay, cool, thanks.
DCRPC over HTTP is just the same as DCRPC over TCP, except that they throw a connect type header on the front to say which machine to redirect it to. So it really is just a forwarding service, and it's a way of getting through firewalls, basically. So you then do a full bind, you do everything, but it's just a way of forwarding a stream onto a server on the other side of a firewall.
I've got to play with some of it, with that one in particular a bit more and learn a bit more about it.
And that SOAP stuff is different, isn't it?
Sorry?
That SOAP stuff is different. That's a different encoding.
I don't even know where that one fits in, where SOAP fits in. I haven't really, but I expect that it would probably be authenticated at the HTTP layer, but I'm not sure. But the challenge is that, as with discussions of SOAP, this list gets longer. And it is very easy for Microsoft to add authentication to any protocol. There are some very simple APIs in the Windows world to authenticate a protocol. And that means that everything, this list, add things like SQL client-server connections, add VPN connections, and any number of other protocols that are used in the Windows world. Adding Windows authentication to it is a trivial task for Microsoft, and suddenly it just works. Suddenly all the Windows clients just know how to talk to it and don't ask for a password. Our challenge is supporting that in Samba 4.
Andrew, I just wanted to answer specifically, Jeremy, with your question.
Yep.
SMS. I have seen exactly what you were asking about in SMS.
Okay. So as Tridge demonstrated in his talk earlier, in his keynote actually, we've got the challenge of Windows XP domain join, and that's what spurred along a lot of this work. Samba 4 started with basically a port of Samba 3's authentication code, but to get through the domain join in a sensible way, and to try and cover all the other protocols, we had to do some work. And so that's where I started really working on Samba 4, was with this target and with the security services stuff that I knew. Just a couple of definitional points, just so we're a little clear. Authentication and authorization are different, often confused, and in Windows they're meddled. But we really should have a step of authentication is just getting the password right, and authorization is determining what you can access. Security is indeed a meaningless term. It's bandied around in every acronym, and I've gone and called my thing GenSec, just to take it one step further. And we have to do the single sign-on. And where we can't do single sign-on, we've really got to get single source of password. Yes, Jeremy?
Sorry, just a quick joke. You need to put simple in there somewhere.
Oh,
simple and lightweight, yeah.
Oh, yes,
so the acronym's
yes.
not complete until it's simple and lightweight. So.
Jeremy had some great fun at the Linux conference last year in Adelaide. With his security suit presentation. You really should grab a copy of it if you haven't seen it. Every security protocol is simple, lightweight, or in some way easy to use, and mine is no different.
But you do have it called generic, so that's a pretty good start.
Yes. Okay. Now, we looked at the list of protocols that we have to secure. These are the list of things we have to secure them with. Clients get to choose sort of any of these at their whim, and we just get to jump up and down and say, yeah, we like it. Intel MSSP we have known for ages. Samba 3 implements it. It is a linearized, in fact, Samba 2 implemented it, but in a really bad way. A linearized version of the NTLM challenge response system that comes out of the early days of SIFS. These challenge and response forms a three-way packet exchange, which I think I just run on a slightly later slide, but this is the core of Windows networking. Whenever something doesn't work, Windows falls back to NTLM, because NTLM always works. Kerberos, well, they actually brought themselves into the modern world and allows all sorts of interesting tricks. I was talking to somebody today about the use of PKNet and Kerberos. That's something we'll have to look at. And Kerberos provides a great load reduction on the domain controller in any Windows network. It no longer needs to be contacted for every time you talk to any file server in the network. And SPNAGO is a negotiation symbol. It is simple and protected, except it's neither. And it negotiates between the use of Kerberos and NTLM in Windows networks. They're finally doing some work to put the protector back in and well and truly removing the simple. SASL is this one also simple or what?
Simple authentication and security layer.
Ah, yes. Well, it's actually close to actually being simple because it uses just text strings, except when you get to the details of is this method secure enough, in which case it's back complex again. But mostly that's actually client-side and server-side configuration, not wire stuff. So they got something right. And one of the ones that we haven't dealt with yet is Digest MD5, which I believe is the mandatory to implement security mechanism for the LDAP standards. So in theory, we have to implement it, although I doubt Microsoft works with it in most cases. So, you know. In any case, one password. If we ever have more than one password for a service, if we ever have passwords which could ever be out of sync, then we're dead. You will see clients using one password with one type and another, and the same password through a different authentication system within milliseconds of each other, and they'd better be the same password. And that will be straight after they did the password change. In particular, that could well be, say, a domain logon system. I could easily imagine that occurring in that case. Okay, as I mentioned about NTLM SSP, I went through most of that. Except to say that it is negotiated. We negotiate many aspects of NTLM SSP. It's not the simple challenge response that we saw in the SIFS protocol before Samba 3. We can change the level, there are lots of details, particularly after you authenticate, regarding session keys and encrypting the subsequent data stream. We don't see that for SIFS, it occurs elsewhere. And there are different options. There's 56-bit encryption by default and a 128-bit option. What I'm going on about here is also the normal NTLM logon exchange is 56 bits of encryption at best because it uses DES. The 128-bit option that no one sets, so I'm actually referring to NTLM V2, which we know nobody uses because Jeremy keeps telling me we've got it broken. Okay. I thought it worked when I implemented it, but clearly nobody uses it. And so NTLM is a complicated protocol. And we can also change, there are a number of options to change ciphers, change options for the subsequent signing and sealing of data. And it's been quite a challenge for the Samba team implementing some of these details correctly. Kerberos. Standards, yes, we love them, we'll extend them. Microsoft decided that Kerberos wasn't quite enough and that to make life, you know, just a bit more fun, they would add in authorization data into the Kerberos ticket and then not tell anybody how to use it. That's the pack, the infamous pack. That's basically known. It's nothing too fancy. But, you know, caused lots of consternation at the time because it was probably the first time that Microsoft really hit into a standard protocol that people really cared about compared to their own protocols where, well, what, you know, whatever they're doing there, we don't care. They added, and this is the interesting challenge, the new encryption type that they added to Kerberos. This is the Type 23 encryption type. This uses the NT password that they had previously and basically builds a Kerberos system around it. It's the reason that you can upgrade Windows NT to Active Directory and not re-enter your passwords. And it was also a pain for us for quite a while as we struggled with Kerberos vendors who wouldn't ship this encryption type with their stable version of their software, despite being a very small extra cipher to attack on the end. And so for many years, Sam was quite frustrated at the at getting people to update their Kerberos libraries. Red Hat Enterprise Linux 3 was the most painful example of this, because they were very much enjoying their stability of running the old version despite the pain it was causing their users. Okay, Espinego, which I sort of mentioned, selects between these two. Yeah, we're finally getting that protected. I won't say anything about the simple. Another protocol, this one most people won't have heard about and most people won't encounter. It's probably a good thing. S-Channel is Microsoft's way of getting between Windows servers and Windows domain members and securing that traffic. In particular, it's about securing the logon traffic between the two, because there's sensitive information there, in particular in the form of some session keys, and you don't want people to be able to change their group lists. I know of people who, I've seen some details on mailing lists about people who've done an attack on Windows networks without S-Channel. And all they would do is do a simple memory replacement on a socket. They would look for the administrator, they'd look for their own primary group in the returned packet for the list of groups the user is in, and replace it with -500, which is the administrator primary group. And, yeah, happily, you're now administrator. Until Windows XP, there was no mandatory requirement from clients to use S-Channel. That is why we had the SAMA 2.2 didn't implement S-Channel at all. And that's why we had to have a registry patch, was because Microsoft finally realized that it was a massive security hole not requiring it. And yes, this is one of these lovely undocumented protocols. Sort of. Microsoft was so kind as to decide that they didn't want to reinvent the wheel when they implemented the RC4 HMAC MD5 Kerberos mechanism. And so they implemented S-Channel. They basically shipped the first drafts of that security mechanism to be posted were actually descriptions that were very close to what the internal cryptography of S-Channel is. And so there have been so in implementing details of this, it's been very useful to trawl through the first revision of the standards draft. Later revisions made it a bit more opaque and more general, but the first revisions included almost C structures and loops and things that were eventually turned into, you know, we were not doing C in a standards draft, therefore we'll make it, you know, pseudocode. The first ones were really good. Tied very closely to the whole DCERPC mess. You have to do DCERPC requests to even start on this thing, although you can. It's used also to secure time packets for NTP. And that's going to be an interesting challenge, implementing that without rewriting out the NTP project.
With S-Channel, I've got a question.
Yep.
Jean-Baptiste had sent me some mail that with SP1 they've changed security scripts, or what is it exactly? That
there is
with SP1 you cannot do LSA or SAMR over S-Channel anymore.
Yeah, there has been something really weird happened.
Maybe you want to comment?
We know the problem, that is that with Windows 2003 Service Pack 1, something changed.
Yeah.
And it wasn't in the S-Channel layer. The S-Channel layer seems to be cryptographically intact. However, when you perform any operation over S-Channel on the LSA pipe and I think the SAMR pipe,
yes,
those operations fail with access denied, or Jerry was busy telling me it was some other error code.
Apparently it is a more general problem. I think this is because you can change... you can change your security context if you first bind to the LSA or the SAMR server. So I don't know exactly how S-Channel is used in Samba, but at least I forwarded to Volker on Twitch a document from Microsoft describing your change in SP1.
Oh, you've got a document describing the changes?
Yeah.
Ooh, that's gold dust.
So
okay, because we've been looking for such a document, and
due to some bugs in Windows 2003, it would only give us the first 100 users when not using S-Channel.
Mm.
WinBind is negotiating S-Channel over for SEMAR calls.
Which also a negotiation
and
S-channel
and
avoids.
And we also, while we are at it, we just say, okay, LSA is also S-channeled.
Mm. And it's worthwhile
it,
using
it. Didn't
it.
Hurt me. It didn't hurt until now.
It didn't hurt us, and it was a positive move, particularly, which I don't think we did, but particularly if we'd enforced the use of S-channel. It would have meant spoofed on any of these, because the user and group lookups are sensitive information in terms of what you could modify. So it was a good thing moving to S-channel, because we could ensure that data was not compromised, you know, with the attack I was describing a few minutes ago. But looks like Microsoft has screwed us over again. I'd be very interested to see this document. I'd be surprised if it's really entirely locked out for LSA, but I don't know. Windows operates a bit differently in this area, and it's one of the things that can bite us. Because they usually make these calls in a user context, not a computer context. So we can use a user account. Any more questions, Jeremy? Okay, simply falling asleep. So looking briefly at the history of this whole lot, in SAMBA 2, SAMBA 3, we had basic support for these security protocols. Very scattered. We had Intel MSSP in about three or four different bits of SAMBA. SAMBA 3 ships with three different implementations of Intel MSSP. Earlier versions had more. This was a very different system to what Microsoft uses, which is SSPI, where the same security protocols are used everywhere and can be accessed in a generic mechanism. This gives you a bit of an idea how the most prominent security protocol in the older versions of SAMBA has its history. We started with a version that was tied very closely to our RPC subsystems that had, this is temporarily hacked up as a specific structure written all over it. That comment is still there. These two files contained the various Intel MSSP functions that were just enough to do a password change from Windows NT. That's all it was there for. Tridge then was given a patch to implement Intel MSSP in the same way for our session setup support. And he barfed. It was no way. Tying this to that, I want to ditch that, which was our RPC subsystem. And so Tridge then went and wrote a packet generator that was just enough to generate up Intel MSSP packets and to parse them. But they were still just parse this packet, parse that packet. I rewrote them as a state machine and combined some client and server aspects and things. And it was designing that reasonably generic interface for Intel MSSP that has inspired the RedSec, because the interface is almost intact. And indeed, this is where the second or middle half of the talk goes. I'm glad Yolma finished early, because I think I'm going long. Okay, finally on to what I was intending to talk about now that you're schooled in all of the insanity.
20 minutes left.
I should do. GenSec is, as I've been alluding to, one single place to deal with this. And we don't have none of the users of any part of GenSec have, well, there's a couple of exceptions where things are a little odd, but for the basic processing of packets, it's one function call, simply changing the type of protocol you're using. It's all been, these, you know, Cirrus SASL, GSS API, SSPI, it's all been done before. So just keep on reinventing the wheel. We want it in a particular shape. One of the aims has been trying to have one implementation of every security protocol, although that's currently there are three different ones for GSS API. But we're working on that, and they've got different features and things. GenSec is trying to move beyond just authentication, because Windows ties the problems of authentication and some other things tightly. Windows does some very nasty things with session keys. When you authenticate, part of your password is used as a shared secret between the client and server for the generation of a session key. And this is needed in SIFs for SMB signing and for some data encryption in some really ugly ways, but it's used and we have to be compatible. We need the PAC, that's the authorization data. It's sitting inside Kerberos. But GSS API wraps that entire layer. So one of the things we have to do is to be able to break into the GSS API layer to get to the to the pack inside Kerberos. Now, their functions have been added for that in Heimdall and I believe in MIT. If we're going to use real GSS API, then we'll use these functions. The Samba 3 approach was simply to fake up GSS API by generating a little bit of ASN1 and just sort of saying, well, we're never going to do the rest anyway, so you know, this is close enough. We have both of these approaches in Samba 4 as we try and figure out which is the best way forward. And we can plug in and out the modules and test things, which is very useful, with just some command line options. Also, we have to deal with signing and sealing data. Signing, you know, making sure it can't be tampered over the network. Sealing, by that I mean bulk data encryption. One of the things that I tried to do with GenSec in Samba 4 was to not distinguish between the different names for a protocol. There are, you know, three different ways that you can access Intel MSSP. It has all of these defined. And this is actually an example of it. We have the NTLM is the string used when you ask it over SASL, so that's seen on LDAP. This is a number that is, I think it's hex 16. Someone else will probably correct me. That's seen when we get a DC-RPC connection. This is an OID which we get inside SPNAGO. And all those names mean exactly the same functions. And so we don't want to have different implementations beyond the different names. We just want to start it. So that's the idea. Is we just have, we set up a few different functions. GenSec start by and you say what you've got. If, for example, if you actually want Intel MSSP that's fixed in, I've been getting people to start by OID and use the constant that's defined in the headers for that OID. And this is the basic plugin interface. It's all plugin based. That everything works on function pointers and they just specify out this rather long list of functions for basically working with this protocol. Client and server start are easy, they just set things up. Update is about, this is the portion that does the actual authentication exchange. So you call update enough times until it says, while it keeps saying more processing required. And when it finishes saying more processing required, it should either be OK or error. And then you've got your authentication or you've got your reject. Some details, some things get more complex in DC-RPC, so we need to know what size the signature packet will be before we sign it. We have to be able to sign, check packets, seal them, unseal them. Wrap and unwrap do much the same as these, except they combine them in exactly the way that GSS API does, which we need for some functions. And so these are typically just a simple wrap around those, but define where the packet body and signature go. Session key is required for SIFs to get back the session key that I described before. The session info returns the data that we may have got from the pack, or on the server side, if we do NTLM authentication, we get back data from our daemon controller, along with the yes or no on the password. And the have feature is about testing whether a particular feature was actually negotiated. We have a want feature mechanism. So you can say, I want SMB, I want signing and sealing, but I can check what I got. I may only have got signing, and you then, once it's all set up, if you didn't get what you want, you just drop the connection.
Have feature has made a huge difference to simplicity for application code, because previously the code had to say, okay, if we're on S channel, we have the signing, don't have sealing, we have whatever features. But now the application code can just say, I gave you all these blobs to GenSec. You negotiated something. Did you end up supporting signing? Did you end up supporting sealing? Did you end up this? And it makes the application code, the calling code, just much simpler and clearer than what we had previously with all the sort of if statements on types and.
Oh yes, yeah. And removes calling into specific mechanisms.
Exactly.
Any other questions? Okay. This is my little GenSec success story. This is what I think shows off what GenSec really did. GenSec implemented SPNAGO. Now, that took us a while, particularly as there are really two variants of SPNAGO, depending on who speaks first. The one on HTTP and the one on SIFS are about opposite packet orders. Because it changes when the client or server speaks first. And Tridge did the packet marshalling for the extra packets required to do SPNAGO over DC-RPC. He assures me it took him about a morning. And he hooked it into GenSec, just followed the pattern of what everything else was doing around it. There was already one set of functions hooked into GenSec there. And apparently it worked the first time. The auth type was specified for SPNAGO, and then it just hooked into the SPNAGO system, and out came authenticated packets. This is why we're building it. As Tridge mentioned at one point, this doing SPNAGO over DC-RPC would usually be a six-month effort and a presentation at a conference. It's one slide. So this is, I think it lines up what we're trying to do. We really should, security services should be this simple for the application programmer or the Samba developer who's implementing a new protocol or is implementing some other aspect that just does authentication. It shouldn't be a hard thing with lots of voodoo. It should be calling a few functions and just watching the results go back and forward. That's why Microsoft has got the same... It's the result of Microsoft using the same things everywhere, and we may as well take advantage of the same benefits that they've used with their programmers. GenSec has a way to go in the future. We have to deal with asynchronous packets. This is where we may send a packet into the GenSec mechanism, and we need to signal back to the application, well, we can't finish dealing with this now. We need to wait for some other event to occur and come back to us later and have the appropriate callbacks happen. I used to be a little worried about this until I realised, because it usually involves state machines all over the place, and as Tridge mentioned in his LCA keynote, state machines send you mad. Then I realised GenSec's already a state machine and I'm already balmy, so what's up? We also have to support GSS API in a better way. It's our biggest challenge, is getting that right. I would like to actually ditch our own GSS API code and use a standard library, but you know, we have some very peculiar requirements in Samba. I'm also wondering whether GenSec is something we should try and take further than Samba. We had some very interesting discussions at the Wine conference, wondering whether GenSec was something that Wine should use. And it looks like we might actually do some interesting work there with GenSec sitting in a Samba process and Wine accessing methods in that so that it doesn't have to get any of this complex code and we can handle all the network talking and everything else. Should we have Linux applications built against Samba for libraries and using GenSec? I don't know. But does get a decent set of Intel MSSP code, which is something which unfortunately I find sadly lacking in a lot of other areas of networked applications. Before I finish on with any other questions on GenSec, I'm going to look over a bit of how we specify usernames and passwords into this system for the next lot. But any other questions on GenSec? All asleep? Glazed over? Okay. Finally, some work that Yolma and I did over, it was not that long ago, it was the last few weeks, was on what we've been calling the credentials interface. This is dealing with how do you specify username and password to a function 15 callers deep? How do you do it in a way that works with all the different authentication backends, different ways you can specify a username, and not calling for a password if you didn't actually need it? These are the kind of details I'm talking about. We need to correctly specify usernames and realms and things. And we need, when we call Kerberos, if we've already got a Kerberos ticket for that user, we really shouldn't be prompting for the password again and going through the full connect step. In particular, Samba had a problem. There was a lot of functions that had username, domain, password. This was a common triplet throughout the Samba code. And it was just assuming that we would always be doing end-to-end authentication, that user, domain, password was the way. The Kerberos realms are different, and we have, so at the very least it was going to start growing to username, domain, realm, password. And what would we do if we didn't want to specify the password now but wanted to pop up a dialog box for the user when we needed it? We also, what I wanted to move to was a single context pointer. Now, it's rapidly becoming a kitchen sink, although I've got to be careful with that. You all will have me hung. but I wanted one pointer that we could attach new things to. So when we found there were new details of credential information that we had to pass from the command line end all the way into the bottleneck, that I didn't have to start adding extra arguments all the way along. And we wanted, in particular, callbacks. Which slide, please?
Right. Basically. I was wondering whether, have you looked at what happens when Windows logs in not by domain and password, but by the name at whatever?
Yes, I've looked at that.
How does that affect this?
It affects us. It's a very interesting little puzzle, and Samba 3 doesn't work with it at all. So the deal is this. Yeah, if you do username at realm in Windows, for Kerberos it does what you expect. But it's entirely a different kettle of fish for NTLM authentication. The first problem is this. The realm is not a domain. User at hp.com might be is the realm, but I understand HP has rather large number of domains, and you could be in any of them. The user principal name doesn't map directly to a domain. You cannot even do a simple lookup names between the two. I think you need the DRSU API crack names things to get between them. And in NTLM authentication, it does an interesting thing. It sends the username at realm as the username and then sets a null string as the domain. And there's some tests. The SAMBA4 SAMLogon test now tests all these for at least the SAMLogon interface. And some very interesting combinations, particularly with NTLM v2. Yeah, so I'm presuming that the server currently SAMBA4 cheats and says, okay, that's a realm and it better be our local one. We don't support anything else. We're going to have to call the cracknames call and find out which is the real domain and then replace some things. And because of the NTLM SSP, it looks different on the wire. And so a few details like that. What was the other bit about that? Yeah, it's just a bit here. It's another whole sort of combination we haven't looked at too much. Jerry.
So is the DSR...
crack
it. Yeah, that API.
Yeah.
Is that essentially just an interface into... So Windows has this thing about Kerberos referrals, right?
Yeah.
So is that just a user space application to be able to call the name canonicalization routines that's used in the Kerberos referral stuff?
I expect it. I think that they're the same routines. Maybe the Kerberos server also calls crack names.
Okay. So when you log in, for example, jerry@hp.com.
Yeah.
Are you saying that the client actually cannot...
No, the
DC is what does it for the referrals, but yeah, are you saying that Windows XP doesn't do it like that?
Well, it's more that I think the DC gets the packets, but if it's going to send it off to the right DC, I think it's got to call the crack names itself. So I'm thinking trusted domains in those for those situations.
Right, so the way that I understand it, and I guess this is... I'm asking if I'm understanding it correctly. So the way that I understand it is that the DC itself does the name canonicalization and then sends back a specific error code in the AS reply that says, here is the realm of that name that you gave me. You need to resubmit your TGT request to the DC for the KDC for that realm.
I haven't looked into that side of things. Where I came across this one first, I was doing some work for my previous company where they were doing NTLM logons. And they had people logging on with user at realm, or they wanted to.
Yeah.
That, I think, probably worked as far as it got to WinBind, but then when they were trying to do a group lookup for it, it failed miserably, and they couldn't even do it, parse it stupidly as username at and then realm and somehow look that up in the domain list. Because the realm part was the top-level realm, but that wasn't the DC that WinBind knew anything about. So we'd be keeping on asking the wrong DC in WinBind to find out the user's groups.
Right.
And so that's where we started hitting it, and that's where I then wrote the torture test to at least see what variations were permitted. We need to do some more work on the multiple realm stuff for SAMBA4 because it's going to get a complex mess.
But it's crack names that maps these.
Yeah, I think so. Seems to be the standard way to get between these things.
I could never figure why you would do an RPC to just do a string talk.
Yeah, I think it's because of this problem. Metz probably knows a bit more about it. Nicely passing the buck here. Okay, so we want callbacks. We love callbacks. So I wanted command line only when you need
according to his kettle, 3 minutes left.
3 minutes left. Ah. So we've got to be able to call.
We have a break afterwards. So.
Break? Who needs a break? We're calling back to the command line. We want GTK to pop up a window saying you need a username and password, and Bjorn has been working on that again recently. And we also there's some other tools that need to be called back rather than have the password specified up front. Which way? I'm going the wrong way. That'd be faster. Okay. One of the interesting details about the credentials interface is that it says how well it knows the password. So, and the username, and the domain, and the realm. The idea is that we can correctly override no matter what order things are specified in, although we tried to do the guess first. So first thing, we set up credentials context, and then once we got the SMB.conf set up, we then call a function, which I think might be on the next slide, which goes and guesses usernames, passwords, and everything else from environment variables. So if you've got your password environment variable, we will pull it out from there consistently in every Samba utility. Likewise, your credentials file, your which you may specify with environment variable, or a file descriptor, or the rest, that should keep the security nuts happy. Credentials callback, you can specify a callback, which will go back and fetch the password, or the password may have been specified on the command line. And so we have a single parsing routine, which parses the minus u string into the various forms it could be at. Username at realm percent password user slash slash domain slash slash username percent password etc. So in the C functions when you're developing Samba 4 applications, we firstly initialize the credential system, then we basically call the get interface is go and get passwords, the set one is for setting the passwords in, and you call them at the appropriate places, including the details about how well it's known, or potentially calling a callback at that point. We need to look at how these callbacks are going to interact with asynchronous code, because that's going to get a little hairy, because we may wish to continue processing packets while we've got a dialogue popped up. Yes, here's the guess function, and we've also got a specific function for setting up anonymous connections, because we do that a lot, and there's a particular set and get anonymous or is anonymous call, so you can tell when you're dealing with this is anonymous, because some protocols, like HTTP for example, anonymous means no authentication at all, while for DCRPC, and DCRPC is a similar example, but for NTLMSSP, anonymous means put in null username and password. I designed up all this system, and then there was a rather fortunate, unexpected windfall. We had code in Samba 3 for dealing with retrieve the machine account password from the database. And this had to be scattered into all sorts of places. I found it actually fitted very nicely in the credentials code. And so now there's one function which sets the machine account data from the secrets.ldb. It does mean that we have to link a few things to every utility in Samba, because this is potentially globally available even on utilities that don't usually run as root. But it seems to have reduced the amount of code and complexity in parts of Samba, and will allow us to use minus capital P, which is Tridger's choice of option a while back, to use the machine account password anywhere, typically with Kerberos or for S-channel. Finally, questions, rotten fruit, anything else? Volga has the microphone ready. No further questions? Oh well, enjoy your break.
Yeah, thank you. Andrew. So, and according to